It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're very welcome to Tuesday afternoon's Late Lunch on LMFM Radio. Hope you had a lovely Easter weekend. Mixed weather it was indeed, but you look at overall, it wasn't bad. Nice to have the days off. And I know the school holidays continuing for sure into this week as well. Welcome to the show. Short week again this week after the early Easter. Don't forget our usual numbers, 086 1800 658 by WhatsApp or text. If you want to get in touch with us on the show this afternoon, we have a wee competition for you as well. I'll tell you about that in a little while. But I suppose first, Louise, how was your weekend? Had you a nice Easter? Yes, nice
great.
Easter yourself.
Yeah.
Great, lovely, lovely, lovely.
Very and relaxing and did nothing.
Great, that's what it's all about. Taking it handy. It really, really is. And there's nothing to beat, actually, having a weekend. That you just take it easy like that, and especially
I got
in Easter
the remote
one.
Control, so I watched telly.
There you go.
Never happens.
Our Louise doesn't watch telly.
No, I don't.
Because she has to allow others see the TV that love the TV as well, and it's just that you don't. But you caught up over the weekend. What did you watch? Did you watch that in particular?
I watched about 100 series of Monk. Do you remember that show, the detective show? He was kind of like a Columbo from the early 2000s.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay,
it's so on Netflix now.
You're monked out of it at this stage.
No, I have a few seasons left to go.
All right. Good luck to you next Easter. Oh, whenever you get to the TV again.
I do know how to do the perfect murder now, so watch yourself.
Oh my God. We're to watch me back in here. Anyway, over the weekend, one thing jumped out at me. Well, there was lots of things over the weekend, but this news from Mr. Jonathan Ross, the famous broadcaster personality, Jonathan Ross, that he might go a week without showering. You saw this?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, and he said his wife is, it's a similar thing with his wife, certainly doesn't shower every day, but he said a week could go by and he wouldn't shower. You know what I mean? Mm. Not that he never showers, but that could happen. What did you make? What did you make of him saying that?
I hope they're in separate bedrooms.
Why?
Oh, no, not no. A week without showering, no.
In the winter, you could.
No, but you'd be... no. Imagine, like, if you have a duvet at all, you'd be sweat during the night or, you know, in your hair and...
I think...
No,
you,
I
talked about this before on the show and we did a course and I got a lot of slagging over it. Yeah. I think in the winter you could go... In cold weather now in the winter, you could go the week without showering. But in the summer, I think it's a lot to do with the weather. You know, how warm it is, how hot the weather is.
I wouldn't say the weather, but I'd say if you're doing any kind of, like if you were like me yesterday and just sat watching telly all day and just got up to the cooker and back down again, okay.
Yeah.
But if you were any exercising or anything.
Oh yeah,
like
all right, you're right there. If you're exercising, going to the gym, if you're doing strenuous activity, working in an environment or whatever. But if you were pretty sedentary and not doing much, little exercise, hanging around the place, the weather was cold, you wouldn't have to shower that often.
Maybe not like
every second day.
Yeah, but not a week.
Could you get away with every second day, would you say? Say 3 to 4 showers a week out of 7 days, yeah?
I'd say maybe 5 showers a week out of 7 days.
So nice. 2 you'd go without. I could get away with 3 in a week. That's why we're in different studios. Did you not know that? Did you know that's why you're in there and I'm in here? No.
Because by the way, with that menthol under my nose.
I did shower this morning, by the way. I will tell you that anyway. That's one out of the way this week. Yeah, but...
So you don't need the air freshener there today then?
No. Folks, what about yourselves out there listening to us today? Do you shower every day? Is there anyone out there goes a little while without showering in... confidence. If you want to send us a message, 086 1800 658 by WhatsApp or text. Let's talk to a man that knows. He's one of our great, great friends on Late Lunch. Yes, he's the head of the Department of Biology and director of the Human Health Research Institute at the National University of Ireland in Maynooth. He's back with us, Professor Paul Moynagh. Afternoon, Paul.
Afternoon, Jerry. How are you?
Are you going to hang up on me after what I said there in case...
It's an unusual conversation, you know, just after the Easter break. But yeah. There's a bit of science behind it, Jerry. So
yes.
Yeah, I know we're going to chat about that.
Yeah, and look, it's important, isn't it? Like, sweat is important to the functionality of the body, Paul. It goes without saying.
Yeah, it's very important. Actually, if we think about the skin, Jerry, we tend not to think of the skin as an organ in the body, but it's actually our largest organ in the body, and it's quite a complex structure, and it serves a number of important functions. So first of all, it's what separates us from the outside world. So we need to be protected against various things. So it protects us against injury, protects us against loss of water. Importantly, it plays a very important role in regulating body temperature, and also protects us against infection. So in relation to sweat itself, so we have different sweat glands in our body. One type of sweat gland is called the eccrine sweat gland. It's located in most parts of our body. That produces sweat, and the purpose there is really to regulate body temperature.
Mm. So
Louise mentioned there, you know, in terms of outdoor activities, and you can get very hot. It's very important to regulate body temperature because all of our proteins work maximally at a certain temperature of 37 degrees. If it goes above that, they become in danger of being inactivated, and that's why, you know, things like fever is quite dangerous. So how do we regulate body temperature, bring it back down? Well, we release sweat, and then some of the heat in the body is used to evaporate that sweat and bring the temperature back to normal. So that's one very important role of sweat. But sweat also contains some other important chemicals. So other glands in the body called apocrine glands produce this sort of oily sweat. And there's some chemicals there, for example, that are antibacterial, and they tend to regulate the bacteria that are on our skin. We all have different types of bacteria on our skin. That's normal. But in terms of preventing infection by microbes that can cause damage, there are some protective molecules in the sweat as well. So protective, yes, but the problem then is that, and people often think that body odor comes actually from sweat. Sweat itself has no odor. But what happens is some of the chemicals in sweat can be acted on and metabolized by bacteria on our skin and then converted into what we call volatile compounds. So volatile means compounds that evaporate at room temperature, and some of these produce the odor, and depending on the different types of bacteria, we end up with different odors. So that's really the basis in terms of body odor. So when you shower, you're obviously wanting to get rid of this sweat and also the associated bacteria that are producing these odorous chemicals, and that's the reason, obviously, you know, in terms of why most people shower.
Can you wash yourself too much? There's a listener on to us to say, I take a bath every single day, Jerry. So there's somebody 7 days a week has a bath regardless right through the year. Can you, you know, overdo it? Can you wash yourself too much?
Probably, Jerry, but it's not an exact science. And most, if you look at some of the recommendations sort of from a medical point of view, probably the recommendations are maybe every other day. That's sort of usually what's recommended. Because as I said, there are some protective functions associated with it. Also, you can get drying out of skin. So one of the other purposes of sweat, this sort of oily substance, is to protect the skin and protect against loss of water. So you can get drying out of skin. And when you get drying out of skin, potentially that barrier that protects us against infection and various other injurious sort of stimuli, you know, that may be compromised. It's unlikely, but again, I suppose if there is a recommendation, it's probably maybe every other day.
Mm. What about the role of antiperspirants or deodorants? What about that whole area, Paul?
Yeah, so they work in different ways. So deodorants, as the name suggests, that deodorizes, so it removes the body odors. So basically, deodorants contain chemicals, and they target the bacteria. So the bacteria that are on our skin that are acting on these chemicals in the sweat and producing these odorous compounds, the deodorants contain chemicals that basically kill off those bacteria. Antiperspirants work in a slightly different way. So these tend to produce a gel that tends to clog up and fill up our sweat glands. And when our sweat glands, when we sweat a lot, our nervous system actually detects when our sweat glands are full, and then it will turn off that sweating process. So with these antiperspirants, they essentially fill up our sweat glands. Our nervous system detects that and stops us from sweating. But sometimes that kind of an adverse effect, sometimes other bacteria within the bacteria don't have any of these chemicals to convert into these odorous compounds. But sometimes other bacteria can appear if antiperspirants are used quite a lot.
Another listener there, a good friend of ours, I won't mention his name, says thank you to Louise and says, horses sweat, I perspire, I shower every day only because of my work. Isn't that interesting? There you are. Perspiring or sweating, Paul?
Yeah, it's well, again, even in terms of animals and different animals, one of the other functions of sweat in some animals is actually to produce odorous compounds in terms of mating, sort of called pheromones.
Yes.
Maybe not so much in humans, but certainly in some animals, they do produce these pheromones that would act to attract a mate. So it can be different in terms of different animal species. So quite interesting there in terms of the overall biology.
Mm. So coming back to antiperspirants and deodorants, is it better to use a deodorant and not an antiperspirant because blocking those sweat glands, that mustn't be a good idea, is it?
Yeah, so again, they will obviously clear out eventually, but the idea there is to stop actually the sweat from being produced in the first place, whereas the deodorants still allow the sweat to be produced, but the deodorants kill off the bacteria that would act on that sweat. So maybe deodorant's probably better in terms of you still get the sweat being produced. So in terms of regulating body temperature, for example, that can still happen. Antiperspirants, again, clogging up some of the sweat pores, so does that affect thermoregulation here? Probably not, because you're applying it to certain areas, and especially to these apocrine glands that tend to be more concentrated because they release their sweat into hair follicles, so they tend to be produce that sweat where hair is present. Mm. So again, it's quite a localized response, so probably not very many adverse reactions to either of them, to be honest.
What about bed bugs that live off dead skin cells? Are you better off showering, exfoliating to get rid of them?
Yeah, so our skin continuously regenerates. So there are multiple layers in the skin. So at the bottom layer, we have cells that are continuously proliferating. By the time they get to the outer level, they're mostly dead cells and they're just removed. And when we shower, we remove them. And that's one of the other purposes, that over time, for example, if you weren't to shower for very prolonged time periods, you would get this sort of crusty, dead material building up over time. And obviously that, in conjunction with bacteria that then colonize these areas and produce these odorous compounds, that's obviously something, you know, we wouldn't want. So.
There's another listener saying, hi, Jerry, how did people get on years ago when they had no running water, never mind a shower, they got by? I think we all must have stank, Paul, and we didn't notice it.
Yeah, there probably was. So maybe 100 years ago, you know, before antiperspirants and deodorants, the reality is probably people did have body odors. That's just the reality. Interestingly, children, Jerry, so I mentioned there are two types of glands. So eccrine glands are sort of mostly all over our body that produces our sweat for thermoregulation and regulating body temperature. The other apocrine glands, those apocrine glands are only activated at the time of puberty. So young children, babies, they tend not to have any body odor. So it's only when those glands are activated during puberty, then they can end up causing conditions like acne, for example. Mm. You get very high levels of sweat being produced. You can get some of the sweat glands clogging up, and then that can lead to colonization of bacteria and acne.
Yeah,
quite interesting from a biology point of view.
It certainly is, and one aspect of your brilliant work, I have to say. Listen, I know you're on holidays, and that you're so good for joining us today. I thank you so much. So, Paul, can I say every second day, and you'll be okay.
Every second day, absolutely. I think you should be fine, Jerry, yeah.
Paul, you're a star. Love talking okay, to Jerry. You. We really do appreciate you. Thanks, Paul. Take care of yourself.
Okay, Jerry.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's Professor Paul Moynagh. They're one of our very good friends who, of course, I said, is head of the Department of Biology and director of the Human Health Research Institute at Maynooth University. What's the story which you listen to us today? Every day, every second day, once a week, once a month. How often do you wash or shower? Louise, you were just saying about Jonathan Ross, just a quick one. You were saying that when you look at him, his hair is always...
He loves his hair and it's quite long. Like it always has been long, but it's always mostly kind of
does
perfection.
Does he dye it?
I don't know about dyeing, but I'd say he definitely, if he doesn't shower once a week, he definitely
washes his hair
a few more times.
Oh, there you go.
I'd say.
And be interesting to see what he washes in. That's a very good theory from our Louise. You're very observant.
Over the bath. Oh. Head over the bath.
No, the sink at home and put the tap on and away you go. Yeah, absolutely. You can't beat the old sink. What else had we years ago? Only the sink to do everything in. You got bathed in it, you washed the dishes, everything. No biscuits, no sweets, nothing sweet whatsoever. And Easter came. And I broke my fast, I did. But not in the way you might think. Anyway, who to talk to us today? Only one lady. We've loads of good friends, you see, on Late Lunch over the years. And one of our very good friends is back. I know you love her. Laura Amada from Lab Fitness and the Juice Works is in studio to run the rule over where I go from here. Thank you for joining
me. Hi, Jerry. Thanks for having me again.
I did it. And, you know, I think I did it quite comfortably. Although Louise has been telling them on the air here that I've been a bit cranky for the last few weeks because I haven't been getting the chocolate or crisps. Maybe I have. I'm not so sure. But look, I got through it. And I didn't find it that difficult, to be honest with you. You know, when I put my mind to something,
good.
I will always do it. And will I admit to you what happened since
come
Easter
on, tell
came
me
in?
What happened.
Okay, all right, tell the truth. I had 3 packets of crisps yesterday.
On the one go?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But listen, Laura, hold on. Now, don't be too hard on me. They're part of those 6 packs, and actually the bags have got smaller and smaller over the years in those 6 packs. Can I use that as a mitigating factor? Please.
It's 3 packs.
It was 3. I had them and I opened the lovely fruit nut chocolate egg that I got as a gift from a listener. I got several, so I did. But I opened it up yesterday and I gave it a crack. And I had it was lovely. Now, I love fruit and nut chocolate with a cup of tea, which I missed now. I have to say I missed that over the 40 plus days and I enjoyed it. But I didn't have a huge amount of it, if you know what I mean.
Okay, that's good.
Now, how did I feel? I suppose after going 40 odd days.
I think when you give up something, we start remembering, thinking that once you go back eating, it's going to be amazing. We build it up in our heads. And then you go and you feel so good after, as I said, giving up something that is not particularly healthy, you know, that once you have that first bit, you go, OK, maybe built it up in my head that was going to be amazing, but actually it isn't.
Well, I was going to say that to you. I felt guilty after the crisps for sure. I did. I said, oh, you gombe. And what did you? But look, I did. I have to say that. And with the chocolate as well, maybe more so, I said to myself, yeah, it's grand.
Yeah,
you
but
know.
Importantly, how did you feel after eating it? Not in your head, but how did your body feel after eating it? Because think about it, your body was fairly clean for almost 40 days.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there has to be something. Did you pay attention to what your body told you?
Yeah, well, I went to bed at 10:30 last night. I was pretty wrecked, but I'd been busy during the day as well. I'll tell you what I told you, and this is true, that I got by without it, no problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That did it make much of a difference to me? I probably felt a craving satisfied. But then that's the thing that passes and you need to do it again, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. You need that fix over and over again.
But that's what happens with anything that has sugar, especially hidden sugars,
yes.
you know. It's a chemical reaction. The moment it touches your tongue, you get that instant high.
Yes.
And that's it. Once it passes your lips, it's gone. And then you have to either use willpower and say, okay, I'm not going to have the whole packet of biscuits. I'm not going to have the whole chocolate or egg or the whole 3 packs of crisps, okay? Or you're going to go for it, you know what I mean? So, and
yes.
willpower gets exhausted, you know? Mm. You can only do so much. So that's why I always say, like, there's nothing wrong with chocolate. I mean, I love chocolate. But it's the quality of it and the amount of processed sugars that goes into it. I mean, the more refined sugars, the more you're going to crave and the harder your willpower has to work. As opposed to go, if you go for something that would say a higher cocoa percentage.
Yes.
Or treats as the ones that we have here today.
Yes.
I mean, things that are homemade that, don't tell me, they're still treats, there's still calories in them, but they're made with, there's a nutritional side of it. You know, it's made with good ingredients and there's no refined sugars, which means you're going to get that craving satisfied, but you're not going to want to eat the whole box of them.
And that is, I suppose, the whole nub of this thing, because those foods that we talk about there, they're designed.
To grab you.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yes.
This is what we said. I mean, companies, food companies. That's what they want. They want to create brand dependency. You know, so they would put more sugar because you become more dependent on it, and you keep buying the same brand, you get the same hit from it. You know, so that's what they want. I mean, your health never comes into it. So about how much money they can make from you. And what we're saying is your willpower gets exhausted. So if you have a packet in your house and you have two cakes or two biscuits, it's very hard for you to go, oh my God, I still have half a cup of tea left. I'll go for two more, you know?
Mm.
And that's what people keep doing. And they keep adding up. And yeah.
How do I go forward? Is there a healthy crisp? Is there such a thing as a healthy crisp? Or is that a
At home in Spain, you can buy I don't have an issue with crisps. The problem is the oils that they use for cooking them.
Okay.
If you can get, I think in Ireland it's quite hard to find crisps made with olive oil. At home in Spain it's quite common. Okay, you can get some brands, they're more expensive, but I would stay away from anything that has been cooked with sunflower oil.
Would you?
Mm-hmm.
Even though we use sunflower in cooking at home, I use sunflower oil in cooking. No.
Highly inflammatory.
Is it?
Highly inflammatory.
There you go.
Yeah.
And it's something. So you would...
I only cook with olive oil, coconut oil, ghee, butter.
Butter.
100% Irish grass-fed butter. One of the best things you can use for cooking. Yeah. So unlike a lot of things out there that they tell you that it's bad for you and it's bad for your arteries, I am of a school of thinking completely different. I mean, good unprocessed fats, that's what you want.
I like actually the mix of olive oil and a little butter at times in cooking.
Amazing.
That combines
beautiful.
Very well in
amazing.
The cooking as well.
Absolutely amazing.
So there you
yeah.
are. Inflammation. You talk about inflammatory sugars, inflammatory, you're yep. saying as well.
I mean,
certain oils do that too.
And
yeah.
95% of all products that come out from a supermarket are made with seed oils, with refined seed oils. So I always check your chocolate, check your biscuits, and look at the oils that have been put into them. And I'd much rather eat a biscuit that is made with pure butter, you know, like the
yes.
what you call the shortcrust fingers or something
oh,
like that.
Yes.
Like Walker's.
Shortbread, the Walker shortbread.
Yeah,
oh.
like that. I'd much rather something like that.
Would you?
That I can see that the fat that's been put into it is pure butter than anything that contains palm oil, sunflower oil, rapeseed oil. I would never touch it.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm. Yeah. I'm convinced that the reason why illnesses and diseases have like keep escalating is because we are walking inflammation, and it all comes down to the food sources, you know. And unfortunately, as I said, it's being healthy nowadays is harder than ever before, so much harder. And it's because of the way your food is being produced.
Isn't that interesting? With all the advances we've made in
yeah,
science
we're going
and food
backwards.
Production,
we're going backwards.
You feel it's taking us back.
Nutrition, we're going backwards. We're going backward, and it makes too much money. So this is why, because I mean, I don't understand how, with the knowledge out there, why is something is not done about it? Why do governments not actually say, okay, we're going to start giving people free vouchers for, let's say, you know, I mean, clean water, for butter, for olive oil, you mean, for the essential things, you know? You see how people will get healthier, but just it makes too much money to be sick, and it makes too much money to feed people bad food.
And look at the money it costs to care for people with
exactly.
illness. So it's
exactly.
a no-brainer, isn't it?
It's not a brainer, but look, big food, big pharma, they're linked together. You know what I mean? Us, small fish, we can't fight against them. The only thing we can do is bring some awareness to people.
And that's what you do. And we can all do that. I believe everything starts with the power of one. And if you take it on board yourself, you look after yourself and your immediate family. Mm-hmm. That's all you can do in the face of this. Now, you're very kind. You brought myself and Louise in some chocolate today. Anyway, I have a new nickname for our Louise today. She's known as Hula.
Come on, tell him.
Come on, put, tell us there. She'll tell yourself. I, you know what? She should tell me nothing because I can't hold me water.
You're the biggest telltaler ever. You're the biggest telltaler ever.
She says I'm the biggest. Can you hear her there?
No.
The biggest telltale. You can't hear her there yet. The biggest telltaler, she's saying to me, ever, that I am. How many packets had you?
Four.
She coughed slightly there. You heard that? You heard that all right. I had three packets of crisps. Louise had four packets.
I told you I was sitting down watching telly.
Isn't it
today.
Isn't the human body amazing that you're still alive today? That's what I keep saying.
I'm sorry, Louise. She's going to choke me altogether for saying anything. Anyway, I know she's
great.
I think
the human or the hula hoops are amazing to go down my gullet.
She had the hula hoops in her fingers. You know the way the children eat them off her fingers. I can just picture it as well. And she's one of your students, by the way.
I know.
In trouble when you go back. I can tell you that for sure. But look, come back to the chocolate that you brought us today. What have you brought us in here? You've made these yourself.
Yeah, so I make treats. I said, I have two young children. I have a husband, Irish husband, that likes to have something with a cup of tea every evening, you know. And I like to have a treat with my cup of tea. So every weekend I make batches of treats, you know. So whenever somebody wants to have something sweet, there's something in the fridge for
What's
them.
Your chocolate? What differentiates your chocolate from
the
mass produced?
Well, I make the actual chocolate from scratch. I make it from cacao beans and cacao butter. So that kind of two main ingredients in chocolate. So I buy the cacao beans, I buy the cacao butter, I melt it together, and then I add things to make it nutritional. So things like maca powder or lucuma powder, or reishi. Reishi is a mushroom. So things that are going to add antioxidants and nutrients to that chocolate, as opposed to be just being something just to eat with a cup of tea.
What's
you know
this
what I mean?
I have here?
So this is a little protein ball. So that's just made with dates. So the only sweetener that comes from there is from actual dates. So there's no honey, there's no maple syrup, there's no sugar. There's coconut, cashew nut, vanilla. That's all your ingredients.
I'd have to say the sugar in that.
None. No, your dates. Your dates are naturally sugary.
Oh my God.
But isn't it delicious?
It's delicious.
There's no cooking involved. Literally, you only need a blender. And they last 3 months in the fridge, which will never last a batch for 3 months in the fridge.
Never.
But this is what I'm trying to say. It doesn't have to be complicated making your own things from scratch. But you'll have one of those and that'll be enough with your cup of tea.
Plenty.
You will not want to eat 20 of them.
Plenty.
Because there's no refined sugars in it.
So there you are. Missette and Louise are sorted for a cup of teas this evening. Yeah. Thanks to Laura O'Malley. You're very kind. They're absolutely beautiful. We were talking to Paul Moyner before you joined us on a related subject. And for you, Laura O'Malley, Love Your Sweat is one of your strap lines. You told me something a few moments ago and I'm nearly on the floor here. When tell our listeners about you and sweat. You've never...
Haven't worn any deodorant or antiperspirant in 15 years.
No way.
Yeah, I've tried to research it. For me, this is a learning journey. My life is a learning journey. And I try to find out more and more about everything that is hormonally safe to put. And over the last few years, I've become very aware that a lot of the products that we use, from shampoos to toothpaste to deodorants, they're packed with chemicals. And I think Paul was talking about chemicals. So your skin is your largest organ. Anything you apply to your skin is absorbed into your bloodstream. And what people don't realize is that it's not just from doing one day, but when you keep doing this every day over years, okay, there's a toxic overload that your body can't get rid of it. And again, this is going to affect your health. So I try to do as much preventative stuff as possible, because as I'm getting older, I'm reaching 44 now next month, things don't work the same way that they did when I was 20, you know. But the more I look after myself, I think the better chances I have of keep living a long life with good quality of life, not just long, but you want good quality of life. So I try to use anything that is hormone safe, that is not chemicals into it. So for my face cream, I use beef tallow from Irish cows. That's what I put on my face. Sun cream. For sun cream, I only use zinc oxide. So I wouldn't put anything with chemicals on my skin. Simply because I do believe that you get a reaction from the sun with chemicals.
Yes.
For my toothpaste, I use a fluoride-free toothpaste. Again, I don't want fluoride on my system. So it's just something, an approach I've been doing over the years. And deodorant is one of them.
You don't use?
No, I don't use it.
Do you sweat?
Oh, my, teach hot yoga. Do I wash?
And you shower?
And I shower. Yeah, I shower after my exercise.
You don't need it?
No.
What about perfume?
No.
None?
No.
Never?
Again, no. No, if I want to put something, put a bit of essential oil, like a lavender oil, something pure.
Yes.
But no, I don't do it. No, I believe, again, that a lot of your body odor has to do with the condition of your gut.
Yeah.
So if your gut is not working properly, your body will naturally perspire smells. It
comes back to the gut again.
Yeah. So as I always say, everything starts in the gut. The gut is a second brain. Link with mental health, with heart disease, has to do so much with your gut. If you don't look after your gut, nothing really is going to function properly.
Do you shower every day?
No, if I don't exercise every day, I don't shower every day. Obviously, I do the days I do hot yoga because it's not a pretty sight. And if I go for a run, that would be quite sweaty.
Of course.
But otherwise, no.
Of course.
No. Mm-hmm.
I'm just so thrilled because, you know, there is a feeling that you got to every day, but no. Obviously not. And Paul said the very same, you know what I mean? And you're saying the same too.
You have your natural oils in your skin. If it's the same as people with the hair. If you wash your hair every day, you're getting rid of the natural oils of your hair. So that's not healthy.
Mm. So there's lots of ways we can help ourselves. And we've covered a multitude there from, you know, what the treats and that's interesting. It's very interesting in the way you don't touch all of those proprietary things that we would say that are, you know, on the shelves and people throw them into their trolley or whatever every single week. Can it be done? Is it difficult to follow this?
No, it's not. Just small changes every week. I say to people, don't try just to go and change your life overnight. It doesn't happen. It's too overwhelming. You know, start with small little changes. Okay, start by, okay, I'm going to change. I'm going to take an interest on what shower gel my family uses. Okay, as I said, we talked about an app before called Yuka. You can scan it and it will tell you how toxic or how healthy it is. And it will always make suggestions of healthier alternatives. Start looking. Get familiar with the chemicals in it and find that. And some of them have very long names that people get scared by it. Just do Mr. Google, research a tiny bit and see it's actually toxic. I mean, the amount of chemicals that's pumping to us every day, they are so, so highly toxic. Yeah, we never give it a second thought.
Yeah.
You know?
What's that app again?
Say Yuka. It. Spell Y-U-K-A. It's a free app. And literally everything that has a barcode, both food and beauty products, you can scan them and it will rate it between 0 and 100. It's independently owned, so there's not being sponsored by any companies, which is great. It works in most countries because my parents are at home in Spain as well. I have them scanning everything and it will give you a rating between 0 and 100.
Yes.
And you can scan your milks, your toothpastes, your perfumes, makeup, everything. You know. And that's it, small changes. Even if you start making one change a week over the span of your lifetime, that will be a massive improvement to your health.
I have to finish and go back to the beef for the face.
Beef Tallow. It's an amazing Irish company. Amazing Irish company. And it's made with Irish honey and beef tallow.
Well, I'll tell you what. You are looking good on it, young woman. That's
you.
For sure. Thank you so much for joining me again. I love your company, Laura.
Thanks for having
me. Thanks, me. Thank you.
It's time for our Two on Tuesday.
Two on Tuesday.
Playing the songs that just never quite made it to number one.
But we were so close.
I'm supposed to be number one.
We were so close.
Two on Tuesday.
Yes, back to 1985 I go. And this very month, April in 1985, where our Two on Tuesday made it to number two for two successive weeks, but just couldn't make the step up to the big number one spot. And you'll understand why when we tell you about the number one in a few moments. But let's enjoy our Two on Tuesday, this 2nd of April 2024. It comes to us from Tears for Fears. Yes, and it's a real truism. Even today, everybody wants to rule the world. Everybody wants to rule the world. They all want it, don't they? Even today and all the conflicts that are going on. It can't happen. It can't happen. It really can't. Anyway, what prevented that one making it to number one back in April 1985? Well, the song that did was at number one for 2 weeks as well. So the 2 weeks that the two was there, the number one sat at top spot. And that's all it sat there for as well, 2 weeks. No wonder it couldn't surpass it, because at the time it was for something really special. And years later, again, we're still focusing on it. Yes, The number one that prevented Tears for Fears making it the top spot on the UK charts is USA for Africa, and We Are the World.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying, oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can't go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change.
We all are part of God's great big family.
And the truth, you know, love is all we need.
We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones who make it brighter than ever. So let's start giving. There's a choice we're making. We're saving our own lives. It's true, we make a better day, just you and me.
Oh my God, I just wish people would listen to that song and heed the words and stop all the war and conflict in this world of ours, because it's just shocking. It really is shocking at the minute. What a wonderful song that is. USA for Africa, lovely song. I absolutely adored. Well, Louise, what do you think? Tears for Fears?
No.
We Are the World?
Yeah.
Me too. I have to say,
brilliant singers.
Jane
in
Dundalk says Tears for Fears. Jane loves them. She loves it. And I can understand why you love it as well. But all the voices on that song. You know, I picked out so many. Willie Nelson, Stevie Wonder, many, many more. Some gone, no longer with us as well. But it was a powerful ballad, wasn't it? Powerful, powerful ballad. But look, as I say, Louise, has anyone ever heeded, you know, the words of those songs? I don't know. Today in the world, you just despair. You really would. Anyway, both of us, unanimous jury on Late Lunch today for the number one as against the two on Tuesday. We Are the World. USA for Africa. Late Lunch, LMFM Radio. Up next in the show, a lie detector. How would you fare if you took a lie detector test? Well, we're going to talk to a woman who is a polygraph reader and runs a business on lie detection. How would you fare in a lie detector test? I don't think I could tell a lie. I think it would out me straight away, to be honest with you. I'm not good. I'm just not good. I'd give it away. But there are some people who are brilliant liars, and people who can even, you know, train themselves to perhaps, you know, get the better of a lie detector test. Well, my next guest is one of a small number of people in this country who's in the business. She's the woman behind Lie Detector Ireland, Sheen Devine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you very much for joining me on Late Lunch today. I'll ask you this first. What are the main reasons people engage you to take lie detector tests?
Well, I suppose there's a whole wide range of reasons. I mean, I suppose any situation where somebody has been accused of something that they haven't done and they need to clear their name, and there's no other way of doing it. But one of the most popular reasons would be a relationship issue. And then another really sort of popular area is theft. So I would say they would be probably the two most common reasons that we would see people. And I think the relationship side of things, a lot of that can have things to do with, you know, daytime TV shows would often do polygraph testing for that type of reason. So I think people make a connection with that particular reason more so than maybe other reasons. But really, any situation where somebody needs to prove that they're being truthful, we can probably help them.
Mr. Jeremy Kyle has a lot to answer for, I have to say. But I'm sure the practicality of the way you operate is quite different. So let's say there is an issue. Let's talk about a financial one for a start. And somebody undertakes to take a test that's perhaps been accused of financial impropriety, either within a business or particularly within a family as well. Do they come to you on their own, or are they accompanied by the accusers? What way does that work?
In theft, a lot of the times when we conduct the test, it is within a family, and we've come across a lot of situations where a large amount of money has gone missing. Mm. And in a family situation, there's only usually a small number of people that could have had access. You know, if there's no actual break-in, it's an inside job. It's got to be. And so usually, and that's what can cause huge problems within families. So we might get a situation where somebody will come to us and say, you know, mum or dad's money has gone missing. You know, there's four of us that go in and help look after them. And so, you know, we would test, well, if everybody's willing, ideally you would test everybody that's under suspicion, because it's not only just important to find the guilty party, it's important that innocent people can clear their name as well. So, you know, usually in those circumstances, everybody agrees this is the best way of resolving it, and they all sort of come willingly.
Yes.
On the surface, anyway, you know, they all agree to do a test.
And they do that individually without anyone else present. That's what I was trying to get at. Is it just you and the person, or can there be anybody else in the room when it's happening?
No, we just see the person taking the test. Now, we might speak to somebody else beforehand,
yes.
you know, to get a good understanding of the situation, maybe agree questions so that everybody is aware of what's going to be asked. But no, the actual process itself, we just see the person taking the test, and we always say allow 2 hours for that process, which can surprise a lot of people. But a polygraph examination, you know, the preparation before you start any testing at all, that would take in excess of an hour. You know, done properly, it's in excess of an hour. So, you know, we say allow 2 hours, and it's usually close enough to that time frame.
Yes, and would the same apply to where there's an infidelity involved as well, separately?
Yes, absolutely. Especially, you know, I think in relationship issues as well, usually people are coming to us because, you know, the relationship isn't great, and they don't usually pick up the phone immediately. It's usually after things have been deteriorating for a period of time. So, you know, it's the best for everybody that we just see the person taking the test, and that we can focus on, you know, preparing that person without any distractions or rows or arguments or anything like that happening.
The tests itself, there's different, perspectives on this. There are many people who think they're fantastic and they really do, you know, reveal, you know, the truth. Others, of course, are sceptical and question. And of course, you're in the business, and I'm asking you as somebody who operates in this field every day, do you understand that scepticism?
I do, and I suppose So the polygraph test process, it can vary from examiner to examiner. The expertise of the examiner does play a part. And if you have a bad examiner that's not preparing the person properly, that's not asking good polygraph questions, you're not going to get an accurate result. And if somebody's had a bad experience, or they know somebody that's had a bad experience, of course, they can then think, well, they're all rubbish, you know, they're not accurate. So, you know, I do understand people having that point of view, but I thought essentially all we are doing during the testing phase is collecting physiological data from the person taking the test. And when we don't tell the truth, our bodies respond physiologically. Mm. And we don't feel this response, we don't see it, but that's what we're looking for, to see does that happen. But it can happen for other reasons. So, for example, if somebody has a health condition that isn't stable, and you know, maybe they have depression and it's really bad, and you know, if the examiner, you know, doesn't pick up on that or doesn't ask the right questions to determine if that person's suitable, then that health condition they have is likely to affect their test adversely. So there's a lot of things, you know, you have to get right. You have to make sure the person is suitable. You have to make sure you've got the best questions. And a polygraph isn't detecting if you're lying. It's actually verifying that you're being truthful. So if somebody's asked a question and they're not sure or they don't remember, they won't pass the test. So all that preparation beforehand is making sure, you know, that you have the right questions, that the person, you know, isn't withholding any information, that they understand the questions. Because again, if somebody's asked something and there's a word in that question that they don't understand, they can't be telling the truth if they don't understand what they're being told. So that person might not pass, and that's the examiner again not making sure the other person's prepared. So there are lots of things that can go wrong if you don't have a good experienced examiner. But in terms of the stress, you know, I have, you know, I've been involved in tests where we've been able to, you know, recover, adding them all together, in excess of €1 million, you know, identifying the correct person. And then that means that, you know, you're likely to get a confession once they know, you know, they failed the test. So, you know, if you're testing four or five people and only one person is guilty and you're able to find that guilty person, you know, from my point of view, I do absolutely everything correctly, and you do get good results in those circumstances. But people can have bad experiences.
Yes, of course.
Well, you know.
Well done, you, on getting a million is an awful lot of money. Two things: can people, you know, cheat the test? Are there people who have means and ways and have learned how to, you know what I mean, cheat it? That they are lying, really, but they can't deceive the test.
Well, so in order to do that, they would have to stop this physiological response from happening. And that's an involuntary response. So that's a bit like thinking you can go into a sauna and stop your body from sweating. So that response is going to happen if somebody's not being truthful. But what people do, they read up online how to beat or how to cheat a test. And they often think that by moving at certain points, that's going to help them. Or they think taking a relaxant is going to help them. So people can come in with these ideas that they can beat the test, but those things do not work. Now, having said that, if somebody has access to the right equipment and the right training, and you know, somebody who's highly trained may be able to, but somebody walking in off the street isn't going to be able to fool the equipment. They might fool the examiner. The examiner might be thinking, oh, I think they're being truthful, but they can't fool the equipment. You know, the polygraph will pick up on that response if it's happening. You know, if that person's not being truthful, that response is going to happen and the polygraph is going to pick up on that.
Yeah. Are you good at spotting a liar?
Well, I suppose most people who come to us, their family, the closest people to them, are not sure if they're telling the truth. So I won't pick up from spending a relatively small amount of time with the person, are they being truthful or not? Because people can mask their body language, they can come across, and equally people can be really nervous. And they almost look guilty. So I approach this with a view. I assume the person is being truthful. I treat them that way. You know, you don't want somebody to feel any more uncomfortable than the process already is. Because if they are not being truthful, the polygraph will pick up on that. But sometimes the results are surprising. Sometimes at the back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh, actually, you know, I wasn't expecting that. But the person's body does not lie. That response will happen if they are not being truthful. And there's nothing they can do to stop that response. But it can be surprising sometimes. You know, people can be very convincing when they're talking to you and come across as though they are being truthful. But it's all down to how their body responds.
Yes, The Traitors has brought this to the fore, hasn't it, really? The TV series. By God, I'll tell you one thing, Sheen. There's some brilliant liars in the recent series, wasn't there?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And you know, I was looking at the practicalities of this. There's a lot of wiring. You're wired up a lot. Even where you sit, you're sitting on a receptor as well that pick up those, you know, different readings.
Exactly. So the person would be sat on a movement sensor mat, and they would have tubes around their chest. They would have a blood pressure cuff on their arm, although we're not taking blood pressure itself, but there is a blood pressure cuff on, and there's various clips on the fingers. And, you know, everybody taking a test is nervous. People, that's one of the most common questions. I'm nervous. Am I going to fail? But the reality is nobody takes a test over a trivial matter. They just wouldn't put themselves through the process. So there's always a consequence for not passing a test. And I think that weighs on people's minds. If I don't pass this test, my relationship's over, or I might have to pay some money back that I didn't take. So there's always that consequence. And so people are always nervous and anxious. I do find that most people, by the time we get to the actual test itself where I attach the equipment, most people do say, actually, I feel a bit less nervous now, you know, but nerves are not a problem anyway. So whether they're nervous or not doesn't matter. But obviously, it's better for the person if they're less nervous, you know, and just for their own well-being, really.
You're an examiner since 2011. You're an interesting woman. You worked in corporate finance. I'll tell you, it wouldn't be too many in there taking the test, would there?
No, wouldn't have thought so. No.
We won't go there this afternoon. No. But you left it, and then you trained to be a private investigator. And what you, which is very interesting, you spotted a gap in the market here, because there are a few doing this here in Ireland. And, you know, you're at this, as I said, quite a while. I'm sure, like a good wine, you're getting better with time. You can spot more. You know what I'm saying? And you talked all about their preparation, what you do. Obviously, experience is a huge thing.
Oh, it absolutely is. Yeah, experience. When I think back to, you know, 2011, when I was first starting out, you know, I probably do things very differently now. You do your training and you go off. A bit like you pass your driving test, you go off into the world. But, you know, it's that experience that really makes you good at what you do. You know, the more tests you do, the more things you do better, really.
Yes.
And that's why, you know, the results can vary from examiner to examiner. If somebody really doesn't care less and they just rush through the process and they don't prepare people, then they're really doing that person and the polygraph industry a disservice. You know, so it's all about, the more you do it, and as long as you still have an interest in doing the job properly, you do get better, for sure. You know, you come across more situations. So, yeah, it all adds to your sort of experience.
Yes. And in the whole, just before we finish, or in the main, when the tests are taken, they're pretty accurate.
Yes, if the person, you know, is being truthful. Now, they have to be truthful. You know, they can't be holding any information back. They, you know, they have to be 100% sure they're telling the truth. But, yeah, the test would be in the sort of mid to high 90s in terms of accuracy. Mm. But like I said, there are all these other things that you have to make sure are in order. You know, the person is fit to take a test.
Well, let me tell you this today to finish. No wires involved here. I've enjoyed our conversation, and talk about telling the truth. You've passed with flying colours, Sheen Devine. Thank you so much for joining me on my show. Take care yourself. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's Sheen Devine there from Lie Detector Ireland. In our house, March is a very big birthday party month, Louise, but it's extended into the 1st of April because yesterday, Mr. Messi was 13.
You have a teenager in the house again.
Oh my God, multiplied by seven. He's 91 in dog years.
Oh.
And Louise, it's showing on him. It's showing on him. It is. He's 13 yesterday. It's a great age for a Labrador. It really is. And he's doing as good as he can. Remember, Messi we're going back 13 years on this show. When I got him, he was only, 8 weeks, 10 weeks old. Myself and Sarah went down and picked him up in Newry from a dog trainer down there, you know. And Tom Moran, the late, great Tom Moran, dog trainer from the dock, recommended this dog because Jack, the previous fella, I bought from Tom Moran, and Tom wasn't breeding black labs at that stage, but he put me in touch with this breeder, and we went down. We're going to bring two of them home, but we brought Messi home, and I can still see him, the little fella. And he's been a great dog over the years. Fantastic, great temperament with children and everything. But he's arthritis. He has severe arthritis in his hind legs and his spine and that as well. And we get him, he gets injected every month now, and we're giving him painkillers and things like that and keeping him going. But it's a struggle. It's a struggle at this stage. But he's still chirpy. I give him a bone on Sunday out in the garden, and you want to see him enjoying. And there's still the puppy in him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even after all these years.
Playfulness.
A bit like myself. You know, there's still the child. Anyway, but, you know, 13 is a hell of an age, and I hope he goes on for as long as he can. You know what I mean? And you just have to see. Once he can get out and about and get himself around and that as well. And it's a struggle at 13. It certainly is, from there's no doubt about that. But anyway, he celebrated his 13th birthday yesterday, Mr. Messi, named by the Late Lunch listeners on this very show. They picked his name, we offered some suggestions, and Messi got the vote at the time. And he's been my four-legged friend, faithfully by my side ever since. And so we all love him to bits. And the children, the grandchildren love him. They all love him. You know,
he's gentle with them.
Yeah, he is. He is, for a big fella. He really is so gentle with them. But I'll tell you one thing. You wouldn't let a stranger in around the garden. No, no way. Remember I told you the story of the plumber, Pat? Pat the plumber was in the house with me one day a few years back. And I was in the house working away too. And the next thing, the phone rang. It's Pat. I said, Jesus, what's Pat ringing me for in the house? He says, Jerry, that dog has me pinned in the corner down here. So I had to go down and do the business. But anyway, that's one of his little stories from his lifetime. Up to news, weather and sport at 3. After 3, the Grand National winner from Meath and my artists of the week. But up to 3, it's Texas Hold'em and the wonderful Beyonce. Jerry, would you give a shout out to the 70 plus motorcyclists who did a ride out on Easter Sunday in aid of local charities? Well done to all concerned at a time when bikers get bad press. This event was very much appreciated. I'm sure it was. Thank you for the message. We're talking about showering earlier on in the show. If you want to have a shower when you want and when you feel like it, says Sonia. Good on you, Sonia. Well done to you on that one there. John's been on to us to say, Jerry, I wouldn't advise that woman to bring that lie detector outfit up to the doll. I hear what you're saying, John. I hear what you're saying loud and clear for sure. Hi, Jerry. Happy birthday to Messi. Our black lab, Holly, was 17. She lived till 17 and then passed. It broke our hearts. Thank you indeed for that lovely message there. And with that in mind, there are dog owners really anxious to hear about the whereabouts of a chocolate Labrador. Oh, chocolate labs are absolutely lovely. Got off its lead this morning at Abbey Road in Dalkeith. Abbey Road in Dalkeith. It answers to the name Trixie. If anyone comes across the chocolate Labrador dog, please contact Colleen on 089 707 1374 or give us a shout here at the station. They want their doggy back, that's for sure. Our competition this week on Late Lunch is for the screening of Godzilla Kong, the New Empire, the Arc Cinema in Drogheda. Yes, we and LMFM have teamed up again with the Arc Cinema, and the screening is happening on Wednesday week, April the 10th at 8:25. You must be over 12. It's 12 over to attend the movie. Got lots of entries today. Pair tickets each for that special screening going to Harry Knowles, Charlie Martin, Deborah Kerr, Ava Jane Hill and Dylan O'Driscoll. You all have a pair of tickets. We'll be in touch to make the arrangements. I have more tickets to give away for Godzilla Kong at the Arc Cinema tomorrow on the show. Time for this and Late Lunch.
The Late Lunch Artist of the Week.
Artist of the Week.
Yes, my artists of the week this week are the Monkees, Mickey DeLentz, Davy Jones, Mike Nesmith and Peter Tork, of course, with the four boys. They auditioned along with almost 500 other individuals back in the early 1960s for a new show that was to screen on NBC, the television network, about a fictional band. And the four guys were selected, and the sitcom ran on NBC from 1966 to 1968. It was a strange arrangement. Yes, they were musicians, but you know something? They didn't play a lot on their albums or singles as well. And the songs weren't written by themselves. They were written by others. But they produced a string of hits in the mid-1960s, from 66 onwards. They did go on tour then with their own material. And in particular, I was looking, they were in Britain for a time, and audiences weren't impressed with what they saw. But what came out of the studios and produced by the record labels were something else. And today, on Late Lunch, I begin a week of the Beatles. Of the Monkees, shall I say. God almighty, imagine comparing the Monkees with the Beatles. I'll be shot for that. The Monkees, of course, my artist of the week. I begin the week with a song I absolutely love. Timeless. It's the Daydream Believer.
Oh, I could hide 'neath the wings of the bluebird as she sings. The 6 o'clock alarm would never ring, but it rings and I rise, wipe the sleep out of my eyes. My shaven razor's cold and it stings. Homecoming queen.
bet you were singing along. I was. I love that song. I absolutely do. No matter how it was made or manufactured or whatever, what a big, big hit that was for the Monkees. Only one of them alive today. Yes, only one. Mickey DeLenz. All the others have passed. Davy Jones, Michael Nesmith and Peter Tork. And my good friend, Paddy Goodwin, who's listening in this afternoon, just let me know, and I'm delighted to hear this, that the wonderful, the late, great Henry McCullough toured with the Monkees back in the 60s. Well, by God, they had some musician with them at that stage. Did they make music with Henry? They certainly, certainly did. Thanks for that one, Paddy. See you later on. You're with Late Lunch on LMFM Radio this Tuesday afternoon. And up next, after the break, he's only gone and done it again. From a little yard in County Meath, yes, Tom Gibney has won the Irish National. He's with us next. 2012, Liam the Marnie won the Grand National for Tom Gibney, and he's only gone and done it again yesterday with intense raffles, and he's on the line. Congratulations, Tom.
Thank you very much, Dave.
You're just some man for one, man. It must mean so much to the yard there. I'm sure it's just buzzing today.
It is. We're kind of worn out today. We had a late night and it was a big build-up and so on. But we still feel good, Gerry.
You certainly do. And to do it once is amazing, but to win it for a second time. And the opposition you were up against as well. 13-2, second favourite before the off. Were you confident?
I was confident, for sure. He's... he is a very good horse. He's the best we've had. And, you know, he trained very well going through the race. Gerry and his two previous runs were two good wins. So, you know, we were as confident as you can be going to an Irish National.
Did your heart flutter at the fifth last?
No, it didn't really. Sure, it happened so fast, you don't have time to worry about it. No, but it was great.
How important was JJ Slevin on board? And there's a story here because Daryl Jacob would have been riding him only for the collarbone break.
That's right. Daryl got injured about 10 days ago, unfortunately for him. That was a blow. It was the only real hiccup we had with the horse in his preparation for the National because, you know, Daryl, who had won on him twice, was a big part of it and given him confidence, and he had great confidence in the horse. So that was a big negative for us beforehand. But the owners, Simon and Isaac, secured JJ that same evening, even, I believe, to stand in as a sub, and he did a fantastic job.
Absolutely. What is it about a grey, Tom? I don't know. Like, I don't know an awful lot about horses or racing. I enjoy it, and I've been on a number of occasions, and it's wonderful. It must be something else for you as a trainer, the jockey, the owners, and all associated. But what is it about a grey? As a layman, a lay person, we love a grey horse. Why?
It must be the colour, Gerry.
What a straightforward, simple answer. You're probably right, but I don't know what it is. For me, in my lifetime, I always love to see the grey do well. And maybe it is that it's, you know, you don't see a lot of them at the top of the game.
Well, there's not that many of them, and they stand out, I suppose. You know, they stand out.
Yeah. What's the story of Intense Raffles? What age is he? What's his background? Where did he come from? How come you have him in the yard?
He's a young horse, 6 years of age. That'd be on the young side for winning a national. There's normally be race that horse is a little bit older than that, would be terrible with that. But he's improved so quickly. We just happened to kind of head in that direction, and it suited. Simon and Isaac Swade, who own him, bred him, so they owned his mother, and you know, that's fantastic for them. It really adds to it when you own a horse and you've bred that horse. You know, it's a great achievement.
How did the win compare with 2012 and Liam the Marnie?
It was very different. We were in a very different place at the time, but it was, you know, it was equally thrilling and satisfying. You know, it was a fantastic feeling. And his rival, really, Jerry, you know, it's just very, very satisfying feeling. It's a great buzz. And Fairy House for us is fantastic because, you know, we're local. We're here in Trim, and I'd know an awful lot of people there, and there was an awful lot of well-wishers afterwards, which really adds to the whole thing. So, it's an amazing feeling.
Oh, and, you know, as you say, a local horse to win it and a local track as well is really, really special. Well, look, Tom, I know everybody wants a piece of you today, but we're very appreciative that you joined us here on Late Lunch on LMFM Radio. And as they say, win it once, fantastic. Win it twice, simply amazing. Again, congratulations to you and everybody at the yard, the owners, jockey, all associated with it. It's a wonderful, wonderful honour, and enjoy, Tom.
Thank you very much, Jerry.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's Tom Gibney there, trainer of the Irish Grand National winner. Intense raffles. What a race he ran yesterday to win the Grey. And well done to all concerned. Eddie Caffrey's on his way here on LMFM Radio with The Drive. We're back tomorrow with Late Lunch 1:30. We'll see you then. Leaving you in the company of Dua Lipa.
Here we go. Hey, it's Dua Lipa. Baby, give it to me. On my station.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.